Well, we're ending a series today we've just called Facing Anger. And if you've missed the first two parts of the series, but this has been it's been a journey, and it's been a lot. And if you missed the first week, we talked about how do you face your own anger. And last week we talked about what do you do when you're angry with God? And so these have been, you know, tough topics. It's not getting any easier. Today we're going to talk about what to do when you're angry with the church or angry at the church. And so some of you, you know, may be puzzled by this topic because you say, you know, I've never been angry at the church. But maybe this is an invitation for you to gain understanding and compassion for those who have. Maybe you have had frustrations with the church. You don't know that you would, you know, necessarily call it anger, but you didn't know what to do with it. And I hope that this sermon will help you. And then there are those of you online, in person, maybe you're watching some point in the future, and you've been deeply wounded in some way or another by the church. And so I just want to say this right at the beginning. I've done nothing to deserve or to earn this hearing with you, but I just want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak into a very difficult and sensitive topic. Thank you for that. You didn't owe me that, but I appreciate you doing it. And I hope that you'll take some notes today, because I do think that what we share will help you. I do want to say this at the top. As I prepared this week, it just became clearer and clearer to me. There is no one sermon that will cover everything that could or should be covered in a topic like this, because it's way too complicated and there's way too many layers. And, you know, you may leave today and think, well, you know, nothing was said about this or about this or about this. And I want you to know up front, I know that's the case. We could do a series on this. I mean, it's a very deep topic with a lot of moving parts. So it is a tough topic, though, because what do you do when the church, which is the family of God that God gave to the world to be the solution, what do you do when the church is the problem? Like, that's a difficult thing to think about. It's a difficult thing to talk about. And this whole idea of what do you do when you're angry with the church, it swerves into another lane that I don't think we can talk about that without talking about something else, and that is church hurt. And so I want to talk about that a little bit, because these are two so deeply connected. But I want to say this: church hurt is such a vague, and it's such a large, and it's such a general term. I think we've got to bring more clarity to it before we can even talk about anger. Like, what is it? And is all church hurt one thing? And is all church hurt the same thing? And the answer is no, it's not. So what I did this week is I tried to think about, what I'm about to give you, like, I'm a little, intimidated to give it to you, because I just wrote it. Like, I don't know what you did this week. I wrote this week. This is what I did, okay? There's no research. There's no, layers like that behind it. But I just realized the topic of church hurt is so multifaceted. We can't even talk about anger until we try to advance our thinking a little bit more on what church hurt might be. So what I've done is I've divided church hurt into four categories, and I think about them as levels. Like one's the lowest level, four's the highest level, okay? So let's talk about this so we can talk about anger. Here's the first one, and that's just frustration. Like, you may have had frustration with the church. And I just want to say about this, a lot of times frustration happens when everybody's not on the same page, or people have, sharply different opinions about something than someone else, or maybe when something doesn't go our way. Everyone gets frustrated, just like that you would inside your own family, like wherever you live, whatever family you live in, wherever you grew up. Like, it would be common to live under the same roof as some other people and sometimes have frustration, right? Well, that's what the church is. The church is a big family. It's not, the scripture doesn't say it's like a family. It is a family. And so just like in your family, you're going to have times where you're frustrated. In the church, we're going to have times that we're frustrated. But I think it's very important that we don't call frustration church hurt, because that's a different thing. So let's go to level two, which is, I'm just going to call it offense. And that would be a real or perceived idea that someone has breached your values or your space or your beliefs or your conviction. You know, somehow, whatever you thought something should be, was something should do, it didn't do it, and so now there's been a breach somehow. Now, right up front, I want to say this. Offense is a difficult thing to talk about because all offenses aren't the same. Sometimes we're offended because someone has wrongly breached that part of our life, but sometimes we're offended and no one's done anything wrong. Have you ever been offended and nobody did anything wrong? I'm the only one. Come on, confession's good for the soul. Have you ever been offended and nobody did any, raise your hand, and nobody did anything wrong? Of course you have. You know why? Because you're a person and you're a human, and we get that way. So let's clarify this level of offense. And I want to be careful that we probably don't call this church hurt, because disagreements, peaceful disagreements, are not church hurt. Accountability is not church hurt. Truth spoken in love is not church hurt. Being told no, that you can't do something, is not church hurt. It might be offensive, but that's not necessarily the same thing as church hurt. If that's church hurt, then guess what else you and I have? We have work hurt, and we have family hurt, and we have social media hurt, and we have restaurant hurt, and we probably have the Galleria hurt, and we got Walmart hurt. Do you see what I'm saying? Because everywhere you've been in your life, probably there's been a moment where you've been offended by something. And so I just want to say, let's be careful on that one, probably not to label that as church hurt. Now, here's the third one, and I'm just going to call this hurt, okay? So again, think about the idea that the church is like a family. In your family, if you coexist with someone in the same space long enough, you're eventually going to experience some kind of hurt. Now, maybe this has happened to you in a church somewhere. It's happened to most of us. If you've been, unless you've been at a church, you know, for 5 minutes. Like, if you've been longer than that, maybe you just breeze in and out on Sunday morning and you don't really know people and all that. Maybe you haven't had that. But if you're deeply rooted in a church for any amount of time, just like if you're deeply connected with a family for any amount of time, there are going to be moments and seasons of hurt. And so maybe you've, you know, felt rejection. Maybe you felt like you were on the outside looking in. Maybe you felt undervalued. Maybe you've served sacrificially and faithfully, but you felt like it didn't matter. Like it didn't matter to anybody, you know, what you did or how hard you worked. Or maybe you've been hurt because there was someone that you respected and they did or said something that was so disappointing and such a letdown that it hurt you. Well, I also want to talk about another category of people that often get left out in this conversation, and that is pastors. Pastors have church hurt also. We don't think about it because most pastors don't talk about it. But let me just give you one stat, one current stat, to sort of open up this part of the conversation. 80% of pastors say that being a pastor, being in ministry, has negatively affected their family. And there's a large, unusually high percentage of pastors' kids that don't go to church anymore because of the way the church treated their mom and dad. So you would think, okay, if pastors have church hurt and church people have church hurt, who are all these people doing all the hurt? If we could just get them all together and straighten them out, it would fix all this, right? Here's the catch. It's all of us. All of us are part of this family. All of us are part of this dynamic. All of us are part of this living organism, and all of us are, you know, potential to hurt someone or be hurt by someone, and that's the nature of what it is to be close to other people. So now here's the fourth one. Again, I made these words up. The fourth level, I would say, is a wound. A wound. I think there are things that have happened in churches at times that are so painful and so egregious and so bad that they almost have to be given their own special category. And I'm just going to call it a wound. I don't know what the right word to call it is, but I'm going to call it a wound. In other words, there is damage that's been done that's so bad, it lingers inside a person for a long time. And it creates a divot in their soul. And that oftentimes happens when the line's been crossed into some type of abuse, whether it's spiritual manipulation or it's physical abuse or mental and emotional abuse, sexual abuse, abuse of what happens is it's when someone uses the access that they have to you to hurt you, to abuse you. And that's a wound like that. Look, I've pastored way too long and I've had way too many conversations with people that sound something like this. 30 years ago, or when I was a child, or when I was growing up in church, or whatever, you know, or we had this event, we had this thing, and then here comes the story, and they've carried this weight for years and years and years, and I just want to say to you, it's dangerous for us to throw all church hurt into one bucket and act like it's the same thing. Because this particular category that I'm talking about now needs to be addressed in a different way, and it needs to be respected, and those stories need to be heard. Because this is a deep and a painful thing. And by the way, for the people who are victims of it, it's confusing and it's disorienting, and it oftentimes affects someone's faith. It affects their belief in God. Like, why didn't God stop this? Why didn't God protect me? You know, why didn't God's people do better? There's oftentimes shame and guilt and fear related to all of this. And look, I'm one pastor in one church, and I don't represent anybody, you know, but us. But I just want to say, if you're watching online or you're here in the room and you've suffered some of those kinds of wounds, if no one's ever said it to you, I want to say it to you today. I am deeply sorry. I am so sorry. And what happened to you was wrong, and it should have never happened, and it was unfair, and you shouldn't have carried that weight for however long you've carried it. And I don't know if anyone's ever said that to you, but I want to say that to you. So having said all of that about church hurt, what do you do when you're angry at the church? What do you do? I'm not going to give you like points today. I'm gonna give you principles, okay? And every principle is not going to apply to everybody because, or every step's not going to apply to everybody because everybody's situation is so uniquely different, it would be impossible for me to figure out how to, you know, say everything that needs to be said. I will say this to you. Whichever of these steps God invites you to take, take that step and leave the rest. And maybe the rest is for another time, and maybe the rest is for someone else. So what's a step you can take? Here's the first one. Define who or what you're angry at. Anger is a secondary emotion, which we've talked about these things in the other two sermons, which means that there's something behind the anger. Anger is what you see on the surface, but it's not what's below the surface. And so if you're going to really ever address anger about anything, but it also applies to this about anger at the church, you're going to have to understand what's behind it. Where did it come from? What caused it? What was the wound or the hurt or whatever that caused this anger to occur? So it's very important for you and I, when we're angry about anything, to be as specific as we can be. Who specifically are you angry at? What specifically are you angry about? And here's why that's important. It's important because anger is a magnifier. Like it makes things look bigger than they are. What happens when we're angry or when we're hurt and we get angry is our emotion, you know, rockets like a, it just shoots off like a rocket. And what oftentimes happens is our view of the world shoots up to match our emotion. So how might this look just an everyday example? Let's say you go to the DMV. Everybody loves to go to the DMV, right? Isn't that fun? You see that on your calendar, you're like, oh no, what did I do? Not today. You go over to the DMV, the line's wrapped around the building, it takes forever, you're in line, and you get frustrated. What do you say when you leave? Because your frustration level is boiled as you get to the top. And what do you do when you leave? The government stinks. The whole government? You went to one location of one department. There are millions of people that work in the government. You're telling me they all stink? Yes, because that's how I feel, right? Let's take another easy example. You go to McDonald's. How many of you know the shake machine's broken? Always broken, right? And what do? You have a bad experience, you're frustrated, you're offended, whatever happens, you leave and you say, all McDonald's are terrible. All of them? Yes, because that's how you feel. Do you see what I'm saying? Anger's a magnifier. It's going to magnify how you see the world, and you have to be careful of that. So you might say, the church hurt me. Well, the church isn't one person. The church is everybody that's at the church. So you can't say, who's the church? It's very important to be specific, because you might say the church and you might be saying 500 or 1,000 people. 500 or 1,000 people hurt you? No, there's probably a few inside that, and it's very important to be specific. Or maybe you were at a church who hurt you, and what you say is, all the churches are the same. Oh my goodness, there are millions of churches in the world. You can't say all the churches are the same no more than you can say any family, all families are the same, or any individual's the same. But this is what anger does. Anger magnifies how we see the world, so we have to be very careful. Proverbs 14:29 says, whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who's quick-tempered displays folly. So the best thing that you and I can do when we get angry, regardless of what it's at, is slow down. Just slow down and ask the question, what am I angry about, and who am I angry at? Now, here's the next step. Discern if your anger is good or bad. We talked about that a lot in the first week, so I'm not going to go over all of that again. Just to say, there is good anger and there is bad anger. And in the first sermon, when we talked about the professor who gives her class an anger journal, found out through running this experiment over and over and over and over that somewhere between like 70 to 85, maybe 80 to 90% of our anger is bad. In other words, it's unjust. We're angry about things that we maybe shouldn't even be angry about. And so not only is anger a magnifier, anger will also blind you to yourself. So Matthew 7:3 says, and why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own eye? The first place that we need to look when we have a problem is the last place we look when we're angry. And you know where that is? Inside. And so when we're angry, we need to slow down and ask, who are we angry at? What are we angry about? And then we need to begin to ask, like, what was my part in this? Is there something that I could have done differently? Am I seeing this correctly? So you're trying to find out, is my anger just or is it unjust? Was it how much of this maybe is my fault? When I was a youth pastor, I used to hang out with a group of youth pastors. We'd pray and then go over to the local high school and eat lunch with all of our students. And I remember once having this event occur. I was in the hallway and the bell had rang and classes were changing and the hallway was just pressed like this, like, you know, students from one end to the other. And there was an incident that occurred. I didn't have anything to do with it, but I was in it. It happened to me, and I remember just thinking, man, this is bad, and, you know, this is wrong, and this shouldn't have happened, and I went back to my youth pastor group, and I told them, because I was thinking, man, I can't wait till they hear this. They're not going to believe what happened, And then I went and told them, and the guy from the Methodist church looked at me and he said, you know what? I think that we don't need to be in the hallway when the bell rings and people change classes. I was like, did you not hear the story? I didn't do anything wrong. That's what I'm thinking. I'm not saying it, you know, because I'm saved, so I'm trying to be a Christian. Did you not hear me? And then he keeps going and he says, hey, we just got to hold a higher standard, so I think we should either be out in the parking lot before when the bell rings, or we should be in the cafeteria. We shouldn't be in between because it wouldn't allow things like to happen. And then I was thinking, what do you know? You're Methodist. You don't know anything. I got the Holy Spirit. And I went home that day, and after I let my offense chill out, I went back and I said, you know, I'm sorry, I think you're right. I don't need to be in the hallway because that wouldn't allow those moments to exist. I didn't do anything wrong. However, I put myself in a place where something could occur that none of us want to occur. So you know what I did after that? Stayed out of the hallway. So we've got to take a moment and look inside ourselves. Here's the next step. Resolve your anger as soon as possible. So if it's a frustration or an offense or someone hurts you, resolve it as soon as possible. Here's why. Ephesians 4:26 says, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. So in other words, move to try to resolve this as quickly as you can, because verse 27, and do not give the devil a foothold. So what happens when we have unresolved anger over time? It makes us vulnerable. It opens us up to the manipulation of the devil, who will use our anger to magnify and to blind and to insert things in our life, and bitterness can grow and all kinds of things can grow, because what the enemy wants is a handle that he can put on you so he can move you around however he wants to. And living in, you know, long-term anger or bitterness gives him that handle that he can manipulate you with and move you around like a puppeteer. So how can you handle a frustration or offense? I'm giving you a lot of scripture. I hope you're taking notes. Proverbs 19:11 says, a person's wisdom yields patience. It's the one's glory to overlook an offense. So if it's possible, overlook it. Like if you can, if it's possible, overlook it. Now, here's the one caveat I would give you. You have to be very honest with yourself. I'm not saying put on the Christian face and pretend like, oh, yeah, no, I'm fine. You fine, you're fine, we're all fine. Nobody's fine. We all know that, right? You can't fake this, and you can't pretend. Here's why. Not just because of what it will do to the relationship, but because what it'll do inside your soul. It'll hurt your soul. So it'll malform your soul, and you'll become a person that begins to gravitate away from authenticity to fakeness. And you got to be very honest with yourself. But when you can let it go, let it go. Now, what do you do if it's like past an offense and it's a hurt? Or let's say this, let's say you tried to let it go and it's not moving. It's a rock and it's stuck. Matthew 18 tells us, if another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses, you've won the person back. Okay, so here's the deal with this part. This verse says, if someone sins against you. You know what I read into that passage? You've got to be pretty clear that there's been a wrongful violation and you didn't do anything or much wrong, and they did. You got to be clear about that. And you've got to be willing to come to someone and say, hey, like, that hurt me. Like, what happened there hurt me. And here's how it made me feel. Like, you've got to be willing to have that harder conversation. But look, unreconciled relationships strains and fractures not only the body of Christ, but it fractures our soul. When we have all these loose ends in life out there, unresolved things and people we avoid and people we don't make eye contact with and all of this, it creates a matrix of life that we have to maneuver through because we have all these unresolved things in our life. And so what the scripture's teaching us is when we harbor offense, it hurts us and it hurts others. When I was, some of you remember Promise Keepers. And there was a big Promise Keepers rally in Atlanta many years ago for pastors. And I went to this Promise Keepers rally, and I happened to be with a buddy of mine named Kenny, who was a pastor in Florida. And he looked like a NFL lineman. You know, he didn't have a neck. He just had those muscles that connect down to his shoulders. You know what I'm talking about? He was just this big guy. And he's the most jolly guy you've ever met, always smiling, always laughing, just big-hearted, big voice, you know, big personality. And we're going to and I'm thinking, man, we're going to this pastors conference in Atlanta, and it's going to be amazing. There are 40, 50,000 pastors from across America. Like, man, the walls of denominationalism are going to come down. There's going to be unity. This is going to help the church. I couldn't be more excited. I couldn't have been more disappointed when we pulled up on the property, and there was a picket line out front. And I'm like, who would picket pastors being together? Like, I couldn't get my brain around it. And so we had to walk through that. And this guy with his sign is just yelling at us. And he's saying, you know, Billy Graham was a fake. And, you know, and I thought, brother, Billy Graham? Come on. You can pick on some people. Billy Graham's probably not one of them. I'm not saying he's perfect, but come on. Billy Graham wasn't a fake. Anyway, it's just crazy. And so my buddy, my big jolly buddy Kenny, you know, he just kind of leans over in the guy's face and he says, "Who hurt you?" I'd never heard that. Of course, I thought, he might be about to. I don't know. He's a big guy. I don't know what's going to happen. But he leaned over at him with this smile, and he said, "Man, who hurt you? Like, who hurt you?" And somehow in that moment, Kenny could see past the guy's anger into his heart, and he realized that this is all coming from somewhere. And so I say that to you to say, the reason it's so important for our offenses and wounds to become resolved, because when they don't, we become part of the problem. There was probably a time in that guy's life he could never see himself out at a pastor's conference protesting with a group of people screaming and, you know, all of this. But if we don't heal, we continue to hurt. We either hurt ourselves or we hurt other people. So now, what do you do if it's a little higher up the scale? See, here's the thing. You can leave, you can have a wound, and you can leave the church, and you can even leave God. I mean, in other words, you can turn your back on him. But you can't leave your pain. Because the thing is, until that pain's unpacked, it's going to go in your suitcase with you everywhere you go. And so what do we do if we're on the upper end of a hurt, or maybe it's a deep wound? Here's what I would say the next step is. Process your pain with a trusted friend. There are some burdens in life that are too heavy to carry. They just can't be carried by one person. Galatians 6:2 says, "Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you'll fulfill the law of Christ." Now, some wisdom needs to be applied here. Who do you process it with? Who do you share it with? Here's my strong counsel to you. It may be a counselor. It may be a spiritual mother or a spiritual father or a mentor. It may be someone deep inside your life where there's deep trust who has a different view of the circumstance or situation than you can. And I would say, if they can be outside your context, it's all the better. I would never recommend processing a hurt like this with a peer, because that specifically inside your context. Because what that oftentimes creates is it creates gossip. And I would say don't process with someone who like if you're their leader, don't process that with them because you're shaping their own heart and life about it. You need to find someone who has nothing to lose and nothing to gain from your pain. Nothing to lose and nothing to gain from your pain. You need somebody as objective as you can get who won't dismiss your anger, but also won't magnify it. You need someone who can kind of try to see it from an outside view. And I would say this, don't take it to social media. There you are. I've been wondering where you are. There you are. Can I give you some reasons? Because when you turn to social media when you're angry, you set other people's opinions and beliefs, and you affect other people, and maybe even hurt other people. And long after your anger is gone, that post is still going to be there. And you can't take it back. And who would think it's a good idea to react in a moment of anger? Like, the worst possible time for you to hit social media is when you're angry. Slow down. Wait for a clearer thought, a clearer picture, and then decide what you want to do. And that includes comment threads. Don't jump in and interact and debate with people when you're angry. It never turns out well. And by the way, I've never heard anyone that said, I was so mad I couldn't see straight, and I put this post on social media, and now I'm happy. It feeds it. It doesn't make it better. It makes it worse. Part of the process may include you reporting what has occurred to someone. It may mean you need to report it to a leader. It may mean you need to report it to social services. It may mean you need to report it to somebody. And look, my encouragement to you is, if that's the case, report it. As a church, we are mandatory reporters. And so I don't say that as a warning. I say that as a step of safety, because the more broken the world gets, the harder we got to work as a church to be a safe place. And so if you've been affected on some level like that, it may be important for you to report that to somebody. Here's your next step. Grieve your losses. I think one of the things we often miss when we're wounded or hurt is, you know, we get hurt and we go, oh, that hurt, and then we just move on to the next thing. You know, we see this with people that date all the time. You know, they have a bad breakup and they rebound, right? Rebound, just go to the next thing. We don't just do that with a relationship. We do that with all kind of stuff. We hurt in this spot, we go get another one. You know, this church hurt me, I'm just going to go find another church. We just bounce, 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 like a rock skipping across the surface of a lake that never grows any root. But in order for you to process and recover and heal, you've got to grieve the things that you lost. And here's the thing, if you've been wounded or hurt, you lost something. You lost time, you lost opportunity, you lost relationships, you lost something. And so it's important to grieve. And by the way, one of the greatest sources of anger is unprocessed grief. So until you grieve what you lost, you cannot heal. And remember, anger is the secondary emotion out front. Until you grieve what you lost back here, you cannot heal and address the anger up here. You've got to address the anger at the root level, not at the surface level. Matthew 5:4, Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Let me tell you one of the signs that I found that you know you're beginning to make progress in grief, okay? When something has been done to you that is wrong, and you're mad about it, you know you're starting to make progress in grief when the anger turns to sadness. Now, that's a dilemma, because one of the reasons that most of us avoid grief is because what we're actually trying to avoid is sadness. Because nobody wants to be sad. Nobody wants to feel sadness. But when your anger turns to sadness, now you're starting to grieve. Now you're starting to face, because there's some things that happen in life that are sad. And when you start to feel the sadness of it, you're starting to face what happened and you're starting to grieve. And until you feel the sadness of what occurred, you haven't fully grieved. The Bible says Jesus is a man of sorrows. And although he lived in a moment of anger, moments of anger, he didn't live in a lifestyle. So he processed those things. All right, here's the next step. Forgive the person who wounded you. I want to say a couple things here. One is, let's just pretend this is a worst case scenario and there needs to be accountability and there needs to be reporting and and all of that. And maybe it's legal and all of this stuff, okay? My encouragement is go through the process. Do the things that are appropriate to do. But here's what I'm a pastor, so here's what I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about your soul. After you've done all of that, and all of that may be necessary, it may be important, and if it is, you should do it. But after you've done all of that, here's my question. What will you do with your soul? Because none of that is going to heal the soul. Now, I just want to be transparent with you. When I wrestled with this sermon so hard this week, because I just thought, God, there's some things that have happened to people sometimes that are so bad that there's got to be a different category in Scripture for them. There's got to be some other truth that I haven't seen. And I looked, I searched, probably spent too much time. And I couldn't find anything. All I could find was forgive the people who wounded you. So let's talk about that. I want you to, for a minute, forget about every leader or pastor or church or whatever. I want you to forget about, just for a minute, just put aside anyone who's hurt you. Just get them out of the way. And let's just think for a minute and ask one question, and let's just focus on you and only on you. Here's the question. What is best for you? Let's forget about what was done or said or whatever. What is best for you? What will help you the most? And so let's just run some scenarios this morning. Sometimes what we do is we say, I know what's best. You know, I'm going to get revenge, right? And by the way, justice and revenge aren't the same thing. But we say, I'm going to get revenge. And we try to, we want them, we don't feel like we'll be happy until they hurt the same way that we hurt, or we make them hurt the same way that we hurt. And here's the truth. Look, you can try and work and press and scheme and all that you want to do. In the end of the day, no one's ever gotten revenge and said, now I'm at peace. There's not enough revenge to get. You can't get enough to feel better inside. It will leave you empty and it will leave you angry. Some people recluse. They say, well, you know what? I'm gonna withdraw and separate myself so far away from anyone who's ever done anything. No one will ever be able to get to me again. That's what I'm gonna do. But here's what we do. We build walls. And they're not nets, they're walls. And you can't build a wall with prejudice. When you start shutting people out, you start shutting everybody out. And the next thing you know, you're surrounded in this castle. You're surrounded inside these walls, and you can't get out. And it's a prison. And so reclusing doesn't work. Sometimes what we do with our anger or our pain is we say, I'm going to become a revolutionary. I'm going to fix it so this can never happen to anyone again, anywhere in the world. And we try to revolutionize, let's say in this case, it's the church. We're going to fix the church so this can never happen again. And here's the thing. Let me tell you why that won't work. I'm with you on the goal. I agree with the goal. Here's why I'm not with you in the process. Because you can't revolutionize the church with anger. The church can't be transformed from the outside in by anger. It can only be transformed from the inside out by love. And so it won't work. It won't work. So what can you do? Well, let's take the best example we have. When Jesus was on earth, he had been wounded, and he had been betrayed, and he had been violated and hurt in ways that almost no one else on earth ever would. And I get it. He's Jesus, and I'm not, and you're not. And we can't get there as fast as he can, and we can't, you know, we're not as pure as he was and all of that. But he does give us an example. When he was being beat to death, what was it that came out of his heart? As he was hanging on the cross dying, what did he say? Luke 23:34, he said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. Why did Jesus do that? Because it was best for him. It was best for him. And it's the only way that he could model that sort of peace and freedom for us. Forgiveness is the only option that will heal. Now, having said that, forgiveness is a process, right? It might be 100 steps. My belief is the deeper the wound, the longer the process. So it's not like you can just up and one day go and decide, oh, today it's all going to be gone. Well, wouldn't that be great? I wish we could do that. When I was over in Spain, some of you know, I took a long hike and just processed a lot of my own inner life. And one of the things that I did is I looked back in my life and I just took my life a chunk at a time. For about 6 days, I looked at different eras of my life and I reflected on what my life was and who the people were and how I interacted and what shaped me and all this stuff. But let me tell you one of the conclusions that I came to, and I'm saying this to you because I want you to know what I'm suggesting to you is not easy. It's painful. One of the conclusions that I had to reach while I was reflecting on my life is this. There were people in my life that hurt me. And that's hard to admit. You know why it's hard to admit? Because we all want to be strong. I want to be strong. I want to be unhurtable. I don't want anybody to be able to hurt me like, it doesn't bother me. I'm fine. People hurt me. And they hurt me so much that here I was decades later still connecting the dots in my life that part of the reason that I am the way I am today is because of things that they did and said back then. Man, that's hard to admit. And you don't want anyone else to have the ability to take that much life away from you. But it hurts. It really hurts. But as I processed that, I was able to circle back and to forgive again. And I'm just saying to you, it's a process. Lewis Meade said it like this: to forgive is to set a prisoner free and discover that the prisoner was you. You might have heard that quote. I want to read one more to you from Lewis Meade's that I read this week, and I've never read it in my life. Listen to this. Forgiving does not erase the bitter past. A healed memory is not a deleted memory. Instead, forgiving what we cannot forget creates a new way to remember. We change the memory of our past into a hope for the future. As I said, the deeper the wound, the longer the process. But let me tell you why I think you should do the journey. Look at me if you're not looking at me. If you're online, zero into my face for a minute. I want to tell you something important. Here's why I think you should do the journey. Because you're worth it. Because you're worth it. You, who you are, as you are, what you've been through, you're worth it. You're worth it to God. And the journey will be worth it. So here's your takeaway for today. Living in anger will hurt you, but resolving your anger will heal you. That's it. Would you stand with me? As we sing this last song, I want to invite you to think about this. Don't let your Judas stop you from getting to your Jesus. Come on. Don't let your Judas stop you from getting to your Jesus. And that's what this song is about, that the worship team's about to sing. And then we're going to pray. Jesus at the center of it all. Lord, today we pause our mind and we pause our heart and we, best as we can, we push away everything in our life and we just put you in the center of it. Because you are the healer and you are the answer. And we come to worship you. Sing this with our team.